PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Evolve Golf. They're a company who is absolutely committed to making products that are better for the player, the course, and the planet. You've probably seen some of their divot tools, ball markers, motion wool socks, leather works, and my personal favorite, the Epoch Golf Tee. You should go over to www.evolvegolf.com and see all the fantastic products they have that you might love to incorporate into your game. Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Brad Holder. He is the Senior Vice President of Marketing over there at Perry Ellis. I'm going to say PEI. It's a much longer name. It's great to have you on, Brad.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you having me. It's good to meet you in person and spend the time with you.
Definitely. I'm going to make you drag it out. What's the full title?
Oh, so it's Perry Ellis International, where, you know, Perry Ellis is one of our brands, of course, but the company is PEI, but we have 27 brands in the company, and six of them are in the golf and racket sports space. So I guess the long version is the marketing part and Perry Ellis Golf and Racket Sports. So
I think the question everyone wants to know is, how do you still have hair with leading that kind of charge? That's crazy.
Yeah, I guess I was blessed with some good genes on that front, but it's funny. Yeah, no, we stay busy for sure. It's the company's fascinating. You know, we've been around for a long time, and the company has 50 years of history, Perry Ellis, and then our brand Original Penguin has 70 years of history. So there's a ton of know-how. I've learned a bunch from the people around me and just been there now for, it'll be almost four years later on this fall. So it's flown by, it's been a great experience.
That's great. You've been in golf for a long time. And I don't mean that to drag you. I'm saying you've had quite a few years in the golf space. So can you share a little bit of the background and where you came from and how you ended up where you are now?
Yeah, no, thanks, Dan. I won't talk about myself too long, but yes, I appreciate you asking about kind of my golf roots. It's funny, you know, you're looking at stuff behind me, but there's a picture of my grandfather, and I'm a twin. So my twin brother and I with our grandfather at Singing Hills, which is now Sequan Resort, but like out in the East County of San Diego, I think we were probably like six or seven, and we're on the putting green and he's walking with us. And I got introduced to the game just through my grandparents, and but was a pretty casual golfer growing up. I didn't play competitively, like to get out there and try to have some fun. I played in West LA when I went to UCLA, and I played some of the same courses that like Alan Shipnuck would tell some stories about sneaking on to Rancho Park in West LA to play a 6 or 7 hour round of golf. That was me in college. But I got really lucky. I came out of business school, and you know, I was considering a bunch of different paths, and this was a long time ago, 20 years ago. But I ended up at TaylorMade Adidas Golf in Carlsbad, and I grew up in San Diego, so that was kind of like coming home for me. And it was a cool blend of sport and golf, and I really got a whole golf baptism and was around, I guess, what I'd call real golfers or authentic golfers that, you know, were single digit handicaps or 0 to 4 plus, you know, plus handicaps. So I spent 10 years at that company and learned about apparel and footwear and golf clubs and balls, and had an amazing experience, and left the golf industry for 3 or 4 years and did some marketing and cell phone cases, mobile accessories. So I won't bore you with that story, but it was pretty interesting. And then came back to golf, and I worked with at Hanma. So that was a chance with Mark King and John Kawaja and some previous TaylorMade executives. And we had a great run with an amazing brand from Japan. Hanma was really legendary. COVID kind of tripped us up, which was unfortunate because it turned out to be a big recreational lift for the industry. But our business was we ran into some challenges from our headquarters. And ultimately, anyway, fast forward, I've been at Perry Ellis now for 4 years. So I've been lucky to work for a couple companies in golf. But it's always good to put down roots and just be able to, love the brands that you're working for and with, and have a great story to tell. So I feel very blessed. I guess it's almost going on 25 years in the golf business. So it's kind of crazy.
Awesome. Yeah, it's always fun to hear familiar names from alternative companies that have gone on and done some great things elsewhere. Mark King is a name who's often thrown around in the business. Pretty impressive guy there. when it came to your time at TaylorMade, were they still doing a lot of those other things? Was Adidas still heavily intertwined?
Yeah, 100%. I was there from 2004 to 2015, and we were owned by Adidas. And there was, you know, two buildings on different sides of the cul-de-sac, and there was the footwear and apparel building and the club building, and the marketing teams and various cycles would either work kind of independently or get together. And certainly at a national level, there are some of the sales teams would overlap, but, you know, there was footwear reps and, you know, footwear and apparel reps, and there were equipment reps, and we had different budgets and different, you know, some of the athletes, a lot of the guys were called TMAG, you know, TMAG, the TaylorMade Adidas athletes. And a lot of that has now broken apart, certainly with separate footwear deals and with players going to live, and Adidas was impacted by that, you know, and there's a lot of things have changed in 5 years or 10 years. But at that time, yeah, that was the heart of launching the R series and, you know, the R11 with the white driver and rocket balls and, you know, some really innovative products. And, you know, maybe things got a little crazy there towards the end. But just in a very innovative time in golf and equipment. And so it was great to be a part of. And we did some disruptive things, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's an interesting point to make, because that timeline allows you to look at golf from more than one direction. There's plenty of guys who look at it purely as an equipment direction. There's lots of folks out there who are wholly focused on apparel or shoes or whatever it may be. You're in a unique position now where you can probably lean on a lot of that experience in the past and see what worked and what didn't, and really apply it to a pretty heavy blanket of brands at this point. Do you think that is a big part of what has helped you get to your current position? And do you feel like some of that has impacted the way you look at things?
Yeah, I think I've described to people in the past that I learned marketing from the shelf back. And it's funny, I mentioned my twin brother's an attorney. And I think he got a lot more grief a long time ago. Everyone has a good lawyer joke, right? But I, as the marketing guy, that used to be safe territory. But now kind of everybody, I think, hates marketing as much as they hate attorneys, right? It's like, because we're surrounded by so much marketing and advertising. So if you say you're in marketing, you're like, oh. I said I've learned it from the shelf back, meaning a lot of in-store programs, I guess a little bit old school with, you know, what works on an in cap or inside a pro, you know, what works inside a pro shop, what works inside a sporting goods store, what works at a golf specialty store. And as golfers, we all have those in our market and our neighborhood. And they're like the fabric of the game. And it's where you check in to play. And I think we all like going into a store, and you guys don't necessarily love to shop, but if you have a mission to go, you know, if you're going to go buy a new golf club or maybe come away with some new clothing, it's kind of fun to buy something for yourself. So just that connection to like the shopper, the consumer, and whether they're spending $1,000 on a set of irons or they're maybe just grabbing a couple polos, and that's more impulse. It's been fun to kind of learn how people shop and react. And, you know, golf is small. It's growing. It's obviously much bigger today than it was 10 years ago. And there's so many great numbers that tell that story of, you know, like almost 50 million golfers versus we used to talk about 25 million golfers. They're all, you know, still interacting with the game, and there's an off course golfer, but coming through those, brick and mortar places was always important to me. And then over the years, obviously marketing has totally evolved with the digital landscape and experiences and media. And there's so many ways to reach a consumer. There's been an explosion of brands. So I think it's an exciting time. I guess it's like a golden age of golf brands. And it makes it, you know, makes it a little harder, the formula today, to get out in front of people is, maybe there's some classics that never change, and we'll maybe talk about some of those. But certainly with like media, you know, it's not just a couple magazines and Golf Channel. There's hundreds of ways to engage with golfers, and, you know, podcasts like what you're running. So it makes a lot of fun to get in that community, you know, of golfers. And I feel lucky to have been a part of that community.
Awesome. Well, there's a number of brands that fall under the umbrella. And what I noticed interesting, I was lucky enough that I got some information early on that suggested that there's some very directional styling and an intent in where these things would realistically belong. You mentioned purchasing from an everyday golf store versus a pro shop or, you know, somewhere else like that, maybe a department store, something like that. That is it easier having so many options to be able to put them all within their correct window, or is it challenging to decide what goes where?
Well, I think it's one of the strengths of our company, and it's, I think, part of smart retail is certainly you need to stand for something and understand who your consumer is. What are they looking for? You mentioned style, I think, right? Like, what is the style or the kind of the fit, you know, the quality that someone's looking for? And everyone wants quality, of course. And so there needs to be value, but there's some people that are willing to pay more because they want more detailing, or they want that extra level of performance, or maybe they want a certain logo. So there's, I guess it's in the retail speak, and I know we're kind of talking business here a bit. It's just that good, better, best idea that, you can have multiple price points and they can live in different retail channels. And for us with 6 golf brands, it gives us the chance to do that. With really Original Penguin and Callaway Apparel being our most premium brands and most premium fabrics, and maybe some of those more exclusive points of distribution in a higher country club or at a resort or in your best retail locations, and those carry price points that I would still describe as more premium. Certainly in golf now, there's people that it seems like brands are willing to charge a lot of money for products. And I think it's up to the consumer to decide where they're getting value. And our prices, everything that we make is generally under $100, So it's there's a variety of bands of value that you can have in there. And we'll always stand behind, like, you will get great quality at a really good price, from Perry Ellis, no matter if you're getting Ben Hogan or Callaway or PGA Tour. Again, 6 brands, there won't be a test, but they all live in some different stores and different price points and a little bit different styling, and it allows the business to kind of thrive and stay in its own lane, if you will.
Yeah, it's interesting to go in those stores and see what's there. And I'm no stranger to the bargain shops as well. We actually have, you'll probably get a kick out of this. We have a, I forget what they call it, the bargain store deal finds, special finds on THP, our community forum. And one of the things that everyone's found out is that you can get Original Penguin at Sierra Trading Post now. So but there's always these pictures like, holy cow, I just found this for whatever price. Like, I just got this amazing jacket for whatever. I'm a sucker for the online deals. I can't help myself. When you guys at Original Penguin send out those, you get this kind of value, I'm like, man, I can't stop myself. But what I want to circle back to is, you mentioned brand recognition and how much that matters. I'm so guilty of finding something I like and then shifting through any sort of rack, looking at logo, not at design. So that has to be a real challenge for you, not only to break out, but also to maintain, right?
Yeah, I won't nerd out too much, but I do love kind of understanding some of that research. And one thing that we see, and we do some research with golf partners like the NGF or through, kind of direct with consumers or people that come to our database, and people are wearing golf apparel, guys in general, half the time for non-golf occasions, right? To wear it to work or to dinner or just kind of hanging out. A golf polo is, it's right there with the t-shirt for just a casual, comfortable item to wear. So there isn't, when people are shopping, and you mentioned department store, and there's so many points of distribution now online, and then ultimately there's product at brick and mortar. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of brands that you're going to find in, a variety, distribution that might be considered more value oriented. But certainly the complexities of what each one of those customers needs and how their shopper like reads, how people read hang tags, and you mentioned looking for a logo. So at the end of the day, there's like the table stakes of, it has to feel good, in your hand. It's got to fit well. And that's why we buy apparel and shoes. You're not going to buy it if it doesn't fit well. And then after that, it becomes a personal choice of color and style. And, there's different kind of silhouettes, I guess, is the term. But, there's different details that come along with different collections. And now there's a lot of these seasonal collections. So you get these collabs. And it's all about trying to keep the consumer's attention. So whether it's a season opener or a Father's Day or a summer series or a beach series, that's, what I think, what you tying it back, like at TaylorMade, we learned what's new, what sells is what's new and fresh. and it has a story to tell. And so I think everyone's always looking for what's new. The trick is so much newness can create a lot of fatigue because we're bombarded with all the newness. And so then you kind of circle back to the classics, right? So it's like, I'm tired of new. I want something that I can trust. And so trust and value. And so that's why some of the brands like Penguin or Ben Hogan or Callaway are rooted in, okay, that's, I know that brand. It's been around for a long time. I know what to expect. And it's fun to kind of, I think we all, you know, there's so many new ways as a golfer to express who you are. And sometimes it's going back to heritage, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, it really, really resonated when you said fit as a perennially online shopper, I guess weekly online shopper, at least perusing it. It's a scary thing to say, oh, I got to go. Scary might be a little aggressive here, Brad, but it's a frustrating thing to want to buy something, but to be unsure about fit, the way it rests on you. Is there between the brands, I assume you have a pretty consistent design style and fit style, right? And something that people can rely on when they want to purchase something new?
Within each brand, yes. The brands, yeah, we try to stay consistent. There, every now and then there's a little evolution to kind of right-size it or to modernize it. So I think over the years, for instance, like Penguin's fit has stayed very true. I would describe it as true to size. If you're in between sizes, you probably should go one up, you know, so it has a little bit of more of a modern fit. Callaway has been known as, had been known as being a bigger fit. There has been efforts. And when we came out with the premium collection, that definitely had more of what we call a tailored fit. So it's still, again, I still think it's true to size, but if you're in between, I'd sometimes say, you know what, stick with, like, try that more tailored fit with Callaway. And then as you get into other brands, you can get a roomier fit maybe in Ben Hogan. And PGA Tour has a little bit more of a relaxed fit. So each brand kind of matches up with the, I guess, the profile of who's generally shopping for it and what they're looking for. And we get a lot of feedback from our own, you know, our own channels, our own websites. And we actually have a good, you should check it out, Dan. We have this size indicator now where you can punch in, you know, your size or maybe your waist size, and it'll show you with kind of this virtual model of how the garment would fit on you. And, you know, kind of a recommended, you know, do you go up to a large or an XL or double X or whatever is the right size for you. So, but yeah, there's a fit. Fit is key. Apparel at the end of the day has to feel good and fit good. And, we have big and tall collections that really lean into the fact that, okay, a big and tall guy doesn't just need a double X. Sometimes they need a longer version for the tall guys. And then the big guys, there is like a, what is a 3X or a 4X? But everything still needs to be proportional. I learned the term grading. Grading is just making sure that when you change length in one area, everything kind of proportionally moves with it. So, you know, again, I'm not an apparel developer or designer, but just seeing what they do to make our six brands plus the other 20 in the company and make your pair of pants fit exactly the way you want them to. It's like kind of being a mind reader. There's a lot of people that know what they're doing from years of, yeah, consume, you know, some trial and error, but consumer feedback, customer feedback. Clothing is, it seems simple, but it's not. It's, you know, the drivers are complicated, but clothing can get pretty technical too.
Man, it's brutal when companies aren't consistent. And anytime we get to hear that storyline that says you can be optimistic that year over year, unless we send, so you mentioned the Callaway going to adding a performance line that was more tailored fit, which I think we've already talked about a little bit in the past, maybe even on this show. But there's an understanding that that will happen. And if that's not stated, then you can get a little bit of confidence purchasing within the lineup the way you would have previously. That's huge. I want to know on your side of it as a marketer, what is that like to have that consistency? Does that mean you can really refine who you're targeting to discuss the product with?
Yeah, I think I mentioned trust before, and the tricky thing about trust is if you say trust me, then that's probably the first sign you might not want to trust that person, you know, but, we try to develop consistency. And like with Callaway, I work with, I'm here in Carlsbad. So I'm, our company Perry Ellis is in Miami, but I'm close to Callaway headquarters. And even though I worked for the other brand down the street, the Callaway guys have accepted me as one of their own. But, you know, we try to, you know, the way that we use their logo, the way that we, you know, cast models, or I don't want to say models, but, you know, golfers who look, who kind of look good in the apparel, everything has to be brand authentic. And so, you know, I guess from a consistency point of view, part of, as you know, again, kind of a business behind the scenes, is a lot of times we'll shoot a season in advance, or, you know, a year in advance, to help with some images when we go out to our retail partners or pro shops. And so we actually have to use sample sizes. And so the sample size kind of gravitates to like a medium. Sometimes it's more of a schmedium, sometimes it's closer to a large. But a lot of times why you see people in these ad campaigns, you know, or the photography on our Instagram page, it looks very consistent, is because they're fitting a sample size, you know. And as we get into a season and we'll have more of the full production run, and you can put stuff on someone who's either smaller or bigger, it gives us, you know, it's kind of more of reality out there. But I think we're not trying to manufacture reality and just show people that all fit, that all have like a 32 waist. It's just that that's what fits the sample size when we have the merchandise samples, you know, early. So anyway, this is kind of some of the behind the scenes stuff, but
yeah, that's perfect. I love hearing about it. And I'll admit, 20 years ago, I was totally okay with the everyone was a medium logic. It's a little harder now.
It's harder. Yeah. So we do, like, as we get, you know, like we shoot our big and tall models more in season. So we'll get the full array of sizes. And yeah. And part of that, I've had recent, you know, kind of discussion of, let's make sure our big and tall guys look like they're playing offensive or defensive linemen, you know, not that they might be the tight end who, you know, still is extremely fit. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that need that extra room and they play a lot of golf. And so, like, there's this move toward being more natural, you know, and maybe not trying to retouch images, like, hey, if there's waves and shadows, and we all need to be more comfortable with kind of in our own skin, you know. So like, sure. That apparel fit is kind of like a cultural trend towards letting it hang out a little bit more. And just, you know, I think dress codes are still important and being put together is still important. And so that's, again, amongst our six brands, that's where I have fun. Some brands are more about getting dressed up, and some brands are more about being relaxed. You know,
that's really interesting you say that. I'm curious about that, because I've seen this trend of almost a mixed bag. Depending on the course you go to, there is a really good chance you see people on each side of the spectrum. Is that challenging to deal with, or is that because you have so many solid options to reach into, it actually makes it easier for you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more choice, and consumers like choice. And for apparel designers, they have a lot more to play with, because there's these segments that, you know, you could give them names, but there's guys that may look more clubhouse preppy. There's guys that may look more streetwear. There's guys that want to dress more athletic. There's guys that want to dress like a tour pro. And there always used to be the guy that showed up in orange, you know, who are the Ricky fans. But now you can see people channeling a lot of these cultures. And I think there was a lot of humor at Quail Hollow during the PGA, where all those memes went around of every guy wearing the blue, the baby blue polo and the khaki shorts, right? And so that'll still happen. I think that's kind of what I'd call old golf, is, oh, all the guys look the same. I think more often than not, and I was lucky this year in San Diego, we had two tour events come through town with Farmers and Genesis. That was obviously for very sad reasons that Genesis was in town, but it was to be out there for two PGA tour events. And again, Southern California is going to look different than Charlotte, North Carolina, but you definitely see a lot more of those progressive fits. And I think style is subjective. And, you know, if you're going to do the joggers thing, just do it well. I think there was a joke that you either need to be under 34 or 34 age or 34 waist, but I don't know who to attribute that one to. But I think it actually gives, it's a lot of fun to tap into different community trends, style trends, and whether some people like large logos, some people like minimalist, some people like prints, some people like solids, some people like to wear it untucked, some people want to, you know, feel like they have something that looks more tailored. So it's it actually, I think it gives the whole market like a lot more energy, and there's a lot of excitement around golf swag and apparel, because there's so much stuff that you can wear to kind of show off who you are, you know?
Yeah. And who you are usually means what you wear. I've had some pretty fun debates with people when it comes to logo, and not just the apparel brand logo, but also the course logo. It's like,
I used to wear the country, and you still do, obviously, but yeah, it's not just, hey, here's the country club logo. It's kind of, hey, if you're wearing Malbon, or if you're wearing a Malbon guy is different than a FootJoy guy, which is different than a Nike guy, who's different than a, you know, a Penguin guy. So I mean, we all share this overlapping Venn diagrams because we're all golfers at the end of the day, but those are choices. And, you know, like this, if you're a snowboarder or a skater or surfer, you're probably going to dress a certain way. And a golfer, you know, you can, it's fun being in airports. I'm sure it's the same for you. You can see a golfer coming from a mile away usually.
Oh yeah. It used to be a little harder. It used to be, you need to look for the logo on the hat. Now it's like, all right, I know that guy is looking forward to playing 18 tomorrow. It's pretty fun.
The hoodies replaced the quarter zip a little bit. You know, the joke was you could look for the hand with the white, the tan line from the glove, but yeah, there's that uniform in golf is still there to an extent because we can spot the guy, but it's definitely evolving, which makes it fun for sure. So,
yeah, I'm curious, you mentioned about the different collections and going through the year, things change a little bit. I know you're not technically on the design side, but is there a lot of engagement, feedback, interaction between you and the design team to say, hey, we're really hitting a good number, or hey, we need to get some more out there, or hey, we'd really like to talk about this right now? How much collaboration goes on there?
Yeah, it's a big loop. And when new people come into our company, at least specifically, they do mention like, wow, there's even more conversation. There, like a lot of people sitting around the table and reflecting on, okay, what sold well? What are we hearing from our, you know, our partners at either big retailers or pro shops and everything in between? What's selling online? So there's just a constant kind of ear to the ground on trends, and the numbers don't lie. But I like this quote. Maybe it's old fashioned, but I've heard other people repeat it that, you know, like if Henry Ford asked people in the 20s, what do you need? They may say like a faster horse. He invented a car. So there's always this role of innovation, and, maybe Steve Jobs and the iPhone would have been a better example. But, you know, our apparel designers are really good at kind of looking into that crystal ball. And part of it is, you know, there's color trends and pattern trends and what's kind of coming from fashion that, oh, you know, orange is going to be a big color this year, or you know, it's all going back to black, or I mean, those things happen. But I think right now what I'm hearing, and as I sit at those tables and I see it, because I see it watching on TV. And so I see how tour players are, you know, and the tour scripting kind of comes from brands, but the brands are also trying to reflect what a guy watching on TV or a woman watching on TV might want to see. And there is this trend back towards classics and solids and, the fun conversational prints, and we all have one, and your friend has one, the polo with the flamingos on it or some cocktails, and it's a fun conversation. And those were really popular for a few years. And things go in cycles. And so I think it's a matter of, you only need so many of those in your closet before you can't keep wearing the same flamingo polo to, you know, your friends have seen it, and it probably maybe doesn't play in the office the same way. And, and so things that are more timeless, more classic, more solid, are you can wear for longer. So I think it's a lot of things. It's a fashion trend of maybe just getting sick of the busy prints and kind of going to something that looks more timeless. But it's also like a value play where if, you know, inflation, we all live with it. And depending on your outlook on the economy, like you want your dollar to go a lot farther. So if you can buy some apparel that you're confident that you're going to be able to wear for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years, as long as it still fits you, versus, oh, that's a funny polo, I'm going to wear that once or twice and then I'm going to be tired of it. So, you know, value, I think, is really important. So the trend is towards some classics, and you see it with, I think, you know, in what's on tour, and you see it if you go out more. I think you're going to be seeing it more and more at the rack. And even with, again, I won't bore you with tariff analysis, but in a world of tariffs, like being able to import stuff that you're really confident is going to hold its value is important versus, you know, importing something, paying a tariff, and then it is, is gone in a few weeks because it was so trendy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't think you'd bore us with that. I think everyone's sitting here hoping that it's not too brutal because, you know, we all face the challenges there at the end of the line on the price tag. But I'm also really curious when it comes to the collection of groups, is there one brand you'd say is most likely to take a risk and one brand that probably is most likely to play it safe and just get the right stuff out there?
Yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, I don't want to have a trick answer to your trick question, but it's like Original Penguin in a way is almost the answer to both. It's like Original Penguin is definitely the brand that I would say has the most, you know, history and permission of taking risks, kind of being a trendsetter. And, you know, this is the brand that has 70 years of history. So to, you know, help to pioneer the golf polo in 1955. And not that, you know, in hindsight, a polo doesn't seem like a breakthrough, but it was a new style and a new look. And so this whole kind of American leisure class post-World War II, mid-century kind of suburban economics, but really being this touchstone of, like, you know, celebrities with Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and Bob Hope and Chichi Rodriguez and Charlie Sifford and Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. And so this kind of a cult following of Penguin ultimately gave it a lot of permission over the years to experiment and come up with kind of new styles, new silhouettes. And we got known recently for a lot of these fun prints and fun designs. And some of our athletes in the past loved wearing those, and we still have those. And there's a guy that wants to stand out in that way. And so we'll always have, I think, some daring Penguin designs. One of our designs, actually, you know, sometimes they'll get the comments of like the USGA, or, you know, a tournament host of like, well, you know, that, you know, Jason Day was famous for what happened with his sweater, right? He was told to take off his sweater. That didn't happen to us once, but we got kind of close once. So that's with an athlete that is in our past who we still love. But so Penguin definitely gets its toes on the line. But it's also the same brand that has designs. I mean, I'm wearing the Earl. The Earl was named after Earl Anthony, a bowler in the 70s, a U.S. Open champ. And so, I mean, this is a design that stood the test of time. So we'll never lose the Earl. And there's a female equivalent, the Veronica. So it's just a classic look with the piping on the placket and the collar and the penguin. And, you know, I think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And when you do look around the market, there's a lot of brands that have a style that's maybe channeling some of the vibes of the Earl. So it's pretty cool to go back into the archives and look at what the guys were wearing in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And some of that grandfather energy is actually coming back into fashion and wanting to look classic and timeless. And so, so I don't know if that's, hopefully I didn't cheat on your question, but I think Original Penguin kind of hits on both ends of that. You know,
I'll be honest in saying it was more of a challenge than a trick question. And I say that because I feel that way about Penguin almost always. I have numerous pieces of apparel that I think are classy, but you look a little bit deeper and they're like, okay, there's a lot going on there. And I love that it's just there. And then I've seen some really curious designs, like, man, they really went for it on that one and not afraid. I think that comes with being around for so long. 70 years is unbelievable. When you have that sort of history, you can sort of stand on your own and kind of do what you want, right?
Yeah, I think we feel like we have that permission to have been in the business since day one. And but I mean, we welcome the excitement of the game. I mean, our brand is about the good times and not taking yourself too seriously. So we definitely we're going to celebrate kind of all the fun that's happening in golf. You know, we had a commercial this year, which was a little bit about those rules and norms and trends in golf, and just we're all kind of breaking the rules these days. And again, as golfers, I still believe in playing fast, and I still believe in, you know, looking put together on the golf course. But at the same time, it's like, let's not stress if, you know, there's a shirt's untucked, or if someone, you know, has their hat on backwards, or I'm okay with that. And, but again, style's a personal choice. So if you want to look really nice and put together, I mean, I love wearing some of the Penguin stuff to go out to dinner with my wife, or to go to a kid's graduation. It's, you know, it's a way to show that you're a golfer, but you're still dressed up for the occasion. So it's, you know, there's something for everyone out there for sure. And I think that's, you know, it's great about golf is, you know, there's 50 million of us, and we're all a little bit unique and original. So,
yeah, I'd love to hear about the commercialization of it a little bit when it comes to the forward facing things like social media or advertising. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think there's not one formula anymore, and every brand is different. I think for Original Penguin, our values are about being, you have to know who you are and what you stand for. And so we're about being original, having fun, being confident, but also being accessible. And so I think that relatability, that's the filter for us. And so when we look at athletes, and I think, not every brand thinks this way, but believe that golfers aspire to what's happening on tour or for your club champion or the best player amongst your friends. And so there's a level of aspiration that's always there in golf. And so these legends of golf that I mentioned before, as we fast forward, there's kind of a new generation of golfers. And, the guys that we work with now, whether it's Jake Knapp, Nico Echevarria, Brian Campbell, Max McGreevy, John Kiefer just came off of kind of Korn Ferry players, getting a lot of PGA Tour starts. We look for guys that are very relatable and they carry themselves with confidence. They look good in the apparel. And so there, when people say brand fit, like for us, brand fit means all of those things. You have confidence and you're stylish, and it doesn't mean that you need to be, into high fashion, but just being, there's guys that look, you kind of watch it on TV, and there's some guys whose shirts are tucked in and they're look like, man, that guy looks put together, and there's other guys that maybe look like they've kind of been through the ringer. And so sometimes that's a function of your clothing, So there's an element of that brand image that influences who we work with. And then when it comes to like social media, I guess the flip side is you have to be very relatable and authentic and eye level. And so when we, work with fans and work with golfers, we try to show more of just kind of the everyday side of guys that are out there with their buddies, having a good time. And we get grassroots, and we engage with some like college golf camps, the one called CGX, College Golf Experience. We work with, we, like you said, we have a TV commercial on Golf Channel. So there's an element of being like, I think, on the ground with golfers and trying to engage and have some experiences while at the same time, creating kind of a brand vibe and an attitude. And in a way, advertising's dead, but I don't think advertising's dead because we still, get inspired by what we see from brands, but it has to kind of touch a chord and not just be about features and benefits. We all get a little bit bored with that. It's important, of course, but the emotion of it all, I think, is what we're trying to tap into. Like, what does it mean to be an Original Penguin guy or gal,
Maybe not dead, just different, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had someone say to me, like, it's about acts, not ads. You kind of have to take action. And so we think like what the guys wear, how they interact with fans, what we do out in the market. I mean, that speaks as much as what we might say in a commercial, So you kind of have to walk the walk as well as you talk the talk,
Okay. You mentioned being authentic while being relatable. And I thought that has to be an unbelievably challenging thing when you're hyper-focused on a very particular social media or a very particular outlet to express who the group is to anyone willing to listen. That has to be brutally challenging.
I wouldn't know if I'd say it's brutally challenging. I mean, I have fun in my job. I think there's other ways that, it's a harder ways to spend your day than kind of unlocking that puzzle. I think you just have to be true to who you are, not necessarily try too hard to kind of say one to say the right thing, but just try to maybe more do the right thing. And we're involved in some community programs that we don't really publicize too much or take too much credit for per se. Like, Charlie Sifford was the first African American golfer on the PGA Tour. He's kind of the Jackie Robinson of the tour, and he was a Penguin man. And we still work with his scholarship foundation, the Cobbs Creek Foundation, and they help to place golfers into either, university programs at the HSBCUs or into different corporate environments, and guys that are great players too, coming through college. And so we support them with a scholarship donation, and that's not like part of an ad, and it's not something that we try to take credit for. And I'm just mentioning it as an example of like working. I got a chance to work with Chichi Rodriguez a little bit before he passed away, and working with Charlie Sifford. And fast forward to today, like Nico Echevarria, he has a couple programs in Colombia where he's from, and he brings them to the US because like AJGA juniors can play golf in Colombia and come to the U.S. And he has his own open now. So just kind of this, the grassroots programs with kids, and I guess you call them like Grow the Game initiatives. And there's been a lot of those programs from the tour and the PGA of America. But as a brand, I think I take some excitement and fulfillment knowing that, like, in our own way, whether it's donating some apparel, donating some money if it's possible, but like helping to grow the game here in the U.S. and also internationally is a cool part of what we get to do. And, you know, that sure. You might not see that on our Instagram. You know, I know you were asking about social media, but I think at the people that were affected by that have a word of mouth, you know, have kind of their own natural people know, and they appreciate it. And I think that goodwill of giving back to the game hopefully goes, you know, you kind of pays it forward. And we've been here for 70 years. I hope we're here for another 70, you know?
Yeah. I think Pete fits in well with the kids. So that's a good thing. Now I kind of meant it a little bit tongue in cheek with the brutally challenging thing, because you see so many brands trying so hard to lean into what is currently a thing or what they think people want to see. But then when every once in a while it comes across like, man, you're trying so hard, it's off-putting, and it takes away from what I think the real brand story is. So, you know, I would assume finding that without looking like you're trying hard is probably the secret sauce of really connecting with people rather than just being there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think marketers were always looking around and you're comparing what's happening with other brands, and but also needing to be true to yourself. And some brands and, you know, in other categories can be very just like user focused. Like every video feels like it's someone like in their bathrobe, you know, in their kitchen doing something that's like super behind the scenes. Versus the other end where it's, you know, extremely curated, and, you know, it's a perfume commercial, and it's, you know, made to look, you know, there's obvious celebrity, and it looks like the shot, it took $1 million to make the commercial. So there's this huge spectrum out there. And I think you have to, you know, you have to be very relatable. And there's ways that that we try to do that, just in, you know, kind of keeping the seriousness down, kind of being able to laugh at ourselves and have a good time. And so, yeah, sure. It's you know, but it's different for every brand for sure. So
absolutely. Brad, as we wrap up, I'm really curious, are there elements of the story that you'd love to get out there and share? Are there things that I maybe haven't said loud enough that you'd love for people to hear about the brand and just the overall at PEI?
No, I mean, hey, it's great to spend time together. I would maybe just say from a golf product point of view, and this is for any category, and I'm biased because, you know, we're here trying to, you know, sell a golf polo to put food on our table. You know, that's what we do for a living. But like for any category, a new pair of shoes, testing a new golf ball, getting a new driver, wherever you're able to invest a little bit in your game, like new products are better, and they're going to help you have more fun, you know? And I think that's what we're all about, is having more fun. So if like some fresh threads, like going out and getting some new clothes, look good, feel good, play good, if that investment is going to help you have a little more fun on the golf course, find a way in your own budget, and, you know, whether, you know, ask your wife permission or just go out and do it, but, you know, invest in yourself, you know? And the same thing goes for clubs. I know the marketing is so intensive about every year, the new driver, the new irons, the new wedges, but over like a 5-year period, like the technology really does continue to just kind of be mind blowing. And it's amazing to go out there on the course and see guys like wearing shoes that are like 10 years old, or, you know, it's like 15 years. It's like, just go get some new shoes. You'd be amazed. Yeah. You know, so like, just try to, you know, look in your closet and maybe get rid of some stuff that's, you know, if you haven't touched it in like a few years, like donate it, get rid of it, and maybe go find, you know, I know you mentioned whether you like to shop, you know, at the pro shop or the thrift shop or anything in between, but like, go get some new golf clothes. You'll be happy. It'll make you feel better out there, you know?
Yeah. I you made a really good point, and this might be a little call to action for THPers who are constantly looking at new products. I donate at the end of every year or some point of every year, whatever apparel I have that I'm not using. It is both a feel good moment for me and a feel good moment for me. It's very selfish of me to do it because it opens the door to more. What a great way to encourage more closet space. I love that. Absolutely do.
I like your angle. It is. It's a good donation opportunity. Yeah. Declutter, donate, and then go get some new stuff. You know,
you've earned it at that point. Hey, before we go, I got to know what's on the flags behind you. We have an open.
The flag is that's Cam's 150th open. So we were fortunate to work with Cam Smith for 6 years, and he was one of the original Penguin men, and ultimately, you know, decided to go in a different direction here this last year. It's kind of the split with Liv just continued to become reality. And so that's signed by Cam from his open win, which was really special. And then one of these Masters flags, I think that one was signed by the most popular golfer around, Patrick Reed, his Masters win. I actually was not at that one. I've been fortunate to go just a couple times. I've been 3 or 4 times, but this one is not signed. I got a new one from Nico that's over here from his, you know, Nico won the par 3 contest this year, which
really cool.
Was a cool day. So I feel lucky. I just a couple of things back there. So
that open one's amazing. Listen, I know things have shifted, but you know, Cam brought fresh life to the original Penguin team. It really opened my eyes to it, and definitely is responsible for a couple of things in my closet. So, you know, that seeing that up there is very cool.
Yeah, Cam will always be part of the Penguin family for sure. He's a OG, and we love Cam. And yeah, I wish him all the best. And yeah, that open, I'll never forget him getting around the road hole bunker with his 2-putt, and just, oh my God, that was an amazing Sunday. So
yeah. Well, hey Brad, thanks for the time today. It's fun getting to know the other side of things, not just what you're scanning through at the store. So really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. This was fun to talk to you. I hope you have a good afternoon. Good golf season.
Definitely. Hey, if you guys are playing this weekend, have a good time. Be authentic and be you. And if that means rocking Pete on the chest, go check out some original Penguin. There's also Callaway apparel, PGA Tour apparel, Jack Nicklaus apparel. Lots of options for you at your price range. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
What's going on, everybody? Jackson Bragg here with another episode of Shaft University. I am your substitute teacher today. Let's get started. What's more important, weight versus flex? Well, first, weight measured in grams impacts feel, tempo, and ball flight of a golf ball. And flex is how much the shaft actually bends, which controls spin, closure rate, and launch angle. What's more important? They go hand in hand, and that depends on your tempo, your feel, your preferences, your swing speed. We recommend going to a fitter to understand what could be best for you and why they put you in specific products. Hope that helps.
THP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.